calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Our quote for the day from Abraham Lincoln: "We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution." Fascinating. In this moment when George W. Bush is being charged by his own party, by Arlen Specter, with perverting the Constitution. Interesting quote from Abraham Lincoln. Coming up in today's program, Jeffrey Feldman with Frame Shop is Open is going to be talking with us about the newest frames coming from right and left. And Larry Scott, the founder and editor of VAWatchdog.org, will be on the line with us. And, of course, just a whole pile of news, a lot of it coming out of the Middle East, much of it coming out of Washington, D.C., that we will be talking about, and your calls as we go into the program today. Right now, however, David Tebow is with us. He's with the conservative Cybercast News Service, CNSNews.com, the website. He's the editor-in-chief at CNS News. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Hey, David, I saw a piece by Manisha Banshal, I think, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Manisha,
thank you.
Right.
Over at CNSNews.com, Dems willing to sacrifice pay hikes for minimum wage increase. And this was about how Democratic senators are saying, hey, let's not give ourselves a pay raise until
right.
the minimum wage is raised. Or for that matter, some even going so far as to suggest that the minimum wage should be a multiplier of congressional salaries or vice versa.
Right.
And I know you're opposed to that. And I'm just wondering, if someone works hard and plays by the rules, why shouldn't they be able to make a decent living in America?
Well, I am opposed to any kind of minimum wage increase or any kind of minimum wage, period. But relative to what the senators said, I thought it was a brilliant political strategy, a rare note of brilliance coming from the Democrats, because it's something that the average person can relate to. If members of Congress are getting pay raises, then why shouldn't the minimum wage be increased? But to the issue of the minimum wage, it's a flawed economic strategy. It's another big government approach to the workplace, and it's misplaced protection for workers who, instead of getting a hike in the minimum wage, ought to be trying to develop more skills.
But when we look at historically at the minimum wage, I've got a chart here going back to 1955 anyway, we see that every time the minimum wage goes up, inflation actually goes down. And employment goes up. It is, you know, classic economics. You have people at the bottom of the economic pyramid, as it were, who earn a little bit more money. What do they do with that money? They spend it immediately because they're spending all of their disposable income. By spending that money, they stimulate the economy. They generate more demand for goods and services, and it helps the economy. And then there's the fundamental issue of fairness. I mean, why should, if we're going to say that we want to have a system of government in the United States, an economic system that is supported by the super structure of government, which, you know, creates the judicial system that allows contracts to be enforced and creates the money that's used and all these other things. If we're going to put all this stuff in place so that folks like you and I, David, who we're both business owners, I'm assuming you are, can play the game of business, shouldn't we say, if you're going to play the game of business, here's one of the basic rules: anybody that you hire, if they play by the rules and they put in a 40-hour week, they should be able to actually live in the United States of America, actually pay the rent and put their kids through school.
You're applying a big government approach to what is essentially a capitalist environment, Tom. You're making it socialist by doing that.
I don't get it, David. Socialism is where the government owns all the businesses.
Socialism
I'm not
is
suggesting.
When the government dictates to private enterprise what private enterprise will do.
Private enterprise comes about by virtue of government, David. If you want to create a corporation, do you own a corporation, David?
You would feel that way.
Well, I'm just
liberal.
Let's just do a reality check here. Have you ever started a corporation?
I am not an owner of a business.
Okay. Well, let me just share a little information with you then. I've started 7 corporations over the years that have done over $250 million in revenue. And so I have some experience with this. You start a corporation, you have to go to the government and say, you know, I would like to do business in a way that limits my personal liability. I want you to set up a set of rules so that me, the businessman, if my efforts screw up, I'm not going to get hurt. My company can declare bankruptcy, not going to hurt me. And the government says, okay, we'll grant you that limit of liability. We will give you the ability to even gather several people together and form a union together and have limited liability. We're going to give you all kinds of protections. We're going to set up a game board that you can play on where you can use the courts to enforce contracts. You can all this stuff is at your disposal and it's all free. In exchange for that, there's a few rules that we want you to follow when you play the game of business. Why is it unreasonable that one of those rules be that you have to pay your workers a decent wage?
Well, it's a matter of philosophy, Tom, but you, as a business owner, and the individuals who you referred to collectively, create the jobs in America. Those are the jobs that people are going to use and make a living from. And
well, that's a nice talking point, but what does it have to do with what I just said?
You ought to have some additional deference. You ought to have some protection because you're the people who put the capital on the line.
And I'm telling you, as a business owner, I have incredible protection, David. I can make really stupid decisions and have the business declare bankruptcy and walk away from it personally intact and unscathed.
And Tom, if I'm working for you and you're not paying me enough money, I can tell you goodbye. Work somewhere else.
In a world where there is a surplus of labor, that's not the case, David, and you know it.
I know that a minimum wage hurts the person who gets the minimum wage because the costs are then passed on to the consumer, and they end up at least as bad off as they were before.
No, they're not. I can tell you, again, from having run businesses, the price of what I charge in the marketplace for my business, the last business that I sold was an advertising agency in Atlanta. It's still operating down there. We sold it to our employees 8 years ago, or 10 years ago now. And when we would go out and bid on jobs, the price that I was quoting didn't have a whole lot to do. I mean, it had something to do, but it didn't have a whole lot to do with what it cost me to actually produce that job. It had to do with what my competitors were charging.
Well,
it had to do with the marketplace.
I'm not making this stuff up. Small business groups in Washington, which represent small businesses all across the country, say that a minimum wage is a bad idea for those small businesses because the costs will be passed on to the consumer and jobs will be cut back.
If by small business groups you're talking about the Chamber of Commerce, which I've been a member of continuously for like 20 years.
Small businesses.
I was just going to say, they don't. The Chamber of Commerce represents
the
big business.
National Federation of Independent Businesses, NFIB, and there are a couple of other groups in Washington that represent the small businessman, Tom, and I'm not making this stuff up. I mean, they've been saying this for years.
Well, then they're representing people who want to be freeloaders. They're representing people who want to use the system and game the system and don't want to be responsible to society.
Those are the people who create jobs, Tom.
No, they don't create jobs.
Are we not going to listen to them?
David, when you and I buy products, we create jobs. I, as an employee, I can't, you know, I could go out tomorrow, David, and start a company and say, okay, I'm going to start manufacturing dirt pies.
Right.
And I'm going to create jobs because George Bush just gave me a tax cut.
Right.
How long are those jobs going to last, David?
Hey, Tom, if you have the ingenuity and the guts to start your own business, and it's not something ridiculous like what you just said.
No, but you're missing my point. That caveat is the essence of the entire thing. Jobs are not created by employers. Jobs are created by demand in the marketplace. Employers then hire people to fulfill that demand so that they can make money off the top of it.
That's baloney, Tom.
No, it's classic economics. Read Adam Smith.
Look, the person who puts his guts on the line and his money where his mouth is the person who creates jobs in this country.
No, he is the person who is employing people. The job is created by demand for the product or service.
Well, no kidding, but I mean, there wouldn't be any demand if the person didn't have the ingenuity to create the product in the first place.
No, there wouldn't. No, it works the other way around, David. Talk to any entrepreneur. People start businesses because they see opportunities to sell something because they see demand.
Environment. If you're not smart, you lose your shirt. And that's why business owners are the people who we ought to look to and not somebody who, by virtue of their mistakes in life, is being paid the minimum wage. That person who's getting paid the minimum wage needs to get better skills instead of demanding a higher minimum wage.
I would submit to you it's not their mistakes in life. I would say it would be their mistake of birth.
A lot of it has to do with the mistakes of life, Tom. You look at everything as a welfare program. That's the problem with liberalism.
This has got nothing to do with liberalism or welfare, Dave.
It absolutely does.
We're talking about the minimum wage. I mean, we're talking about something that's as American as apple pie, something the vast majority of Americans support.
Tom, it's absolutely the difference between incentive and socialism. Do we want to create a bottom threshold for people who, out of no virtue, no incentive of their own, are going to be paid this wage?
David. Are we going to create a system where if you work hard and play by the rules, you can actually make a living?
They should be able to make a living if they are working hard, and they will, because they will make it because of incentive and because of their own hard work.
Well, you know,
that's how you pay people.
I admire your belief in your religion, but I, you know, we're just going to have to disagree on this. David Tebow, editor of CNSNews.com, Cybercast News Service. Thanks for being with us, David.
Okay, Tom.
16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I got friends with low wages. Now one thing I've learned, when Americans get burned, they won't just sit and complain. They know their rights, stand up and fight for jobs that are fair and humane. When those Walmart guys hear the word unionize, they go completely insane. They'll find out who, and boy, if it's you, you're in for a world of pain. Yeah, I got friends with low wages. They work for Walmart in outrageously bad conditions. Because the union's missing.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, I got friends with low wages, indeed. Great parody. And this is the fundamental thing. I just don't get it. Why? How can somebody say, okay, a government program that says that a corporation, or an individual for that matter, can have copyright and trademark protection? So if I write something, say a piece of software or a book or whatever, you know, let's say a piece of software, for example. If I write a piece of software and I can protect that for years and years and years and years and years, nobody else can duplicate it. Nobody else can compete with me. You know, nobody else can steal it. People can compete with me. They can write their own version of it, but they can't. It can't be too close to mine. Right. And so I want the government to make sure that nobody does something that's too close to mine. It can't look too much like mine. It can't sound too much like mine. It can't, you know, they can, you can't have, well, remember when McDonald's sued one of the early cheap computer companies? This was like 10 years ago. Mac, they wanted to call it Mac Warehouse or something, or Mac Computer, and McDonald's said, no, that's too close to our trademark. So we want to have the government protect them. We want the government to protect the ability to say you can't make something that's similar to this. So Bill Gates can become a billionaire, but we don't want the government to protect the ability of the average worker to be paid a fair and living wage. And that's, you know, what the conservative argument boils down to. And it really boils down to the core notion of conservatism. And I think that you just heard it. I don't like to talk about folks when they're not around to defend themselves. So I'm not going to go off on David about this. But he did make the comment, that people who are getting minimum wages are doing so because of mistakes they made in their lives. There is, in conservative thought, in the conservative worldview, there is this fundamental notion that there should be classes and orders in society. Classes and orders, a verbatim quote from Russell Kirk in his 1951 book, or 1953 book, The Conservative Mind, in which he was quoting Sir Edmund Burke, one of the founders of modern conservative thought. And just the whole idea of there is a hierarchy. There are those on the top and there are those on the bottom. And the ones on the bottom should not have any rights. They should not, you know, they screw them. They're on the bottom. That, no bad pun intended. I mean, that is the conservative worldview. And they pretty it up with all kinds of language about free markets and it's going to help folks out and let's help out small business and all this. But the bottom line is, people at the bottom, they made mistakes. They need to pay. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Andy in Seattle. Hey, Andy, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. I just wanted to respond to your guest, David, also, that beyond the excellent financial arguments you made about the economy doing well with raises in minimum wage, I think you have to look at the society and look at what government does for society. And I don't really want to work or live in a society where businesses exploit labor for a strategic advantage to their corporation.
Although it's happening right now in America.
Oh, it is, and that's his whole argument, is that a business owner should be able to use paying unlivable wages as a strategic advantage in making his business successful, and that's,
right.
I don't think that's something that society should condone.
No, you're absolutely right, Andy. The other argument that he makes is that if you increase wages, that's going to increase the cost of goods and services. And in fact, as anybody who's ever read David Ricardo or taken Econ 101, you increase wages, what you do is you decrease corporate profits. Because the marketplace defines the price of goods and services. That decrease in profits may cause corporations across the board to have to raise the cost of goods and services. But history shows that small incremental wages increases in the minimum wage, or even substantial ones, even 50-cent raises, a dollar raises in the minimum wage, don't have that echoing effect. Instead, they actually stimulate the economy. Thanks for the call, Andy. I appreciate it. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Tom, we just have a few seconds left before we've got to wrap this up, about 20 seconds. I know you've got a point you want to make.
Well, love about when David debates you, he never started a business. You, however, started 7 businesses that have generated $250 million, and he's going to lecture you on capitalism, just like Five to Furman Cheney is lecturing Mirtha on bravery. I just love the disconnect.
Yeah, well, what can I say? I'm not putting myself out as some sort of uber capitalist. If I was, a whole lot more of that money would have stuck to my fingers.
Well,
and the fact of the matter is that a lot of those companies made a lot of that money after I sold them.
Yeah, but does he know the word socialism? Can he define it properly?
Well, we've been through that, and his definition is different than yours or mine, and that's the problem.
I like Webster's dictionary's definition, not his.
Yeah, I agree with you. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
It never makes no sense. It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up the lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day. While senators on a holiday. The army recruiters in the parking lot. Hustling the kids, they're juggling pots. Listen, young man, listen to my plan. Gonna make you money, gonna make you a man. Bam, bam.
And welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, and the Organic Wine Company. You can call them at 1-888-ECO-WINE, 1-888-ECOWINE. We're going to get back to the issue of economics here for just a moment, and then there's so much more on the plate. One of the most fascinating things, I mentioned it yesterday in the program, we had Rich McClear on in the second hour of our program from KUDO in Alaska. And the radio station up there in Alaska, which carries this program, hi to our listeners there, the radio station in Alaska actually went to the trouble of looking at the official state government website for the turnout figures from the 2004 election. And they discovered that in 16 out of the 40 congressional districts in Alaska, according to the official statistics published on the state website, there was a more than 200% turnout, more than 200% voter turnout. And so 7 months ago, the Democrats sued the state and said, we'd like to see the actual output from those Diebold machines. These are, by the way, these in Alaska, they use the Diebold scanners. They actually, you fill out a piece of paper, you know, it's a paper ballot that is then run through a scanner, through a Diebold scanner. And they said, you know, and the scanners can be hacked just as easily as anything else. And they said, you know, we'd like, and then the central computers, the tabulators that tabulate the stuff. And they said, you know, we'd like to see the information. And the state, you know, run by a Republican governor who's appointed his Republican daughter as one of the senators. And then there's the Ted Stevens, Republican, the other senator. And the lieutenant governor in the state, a Republican, who controls the elections, the state said, no, you can't. Why? Because Diebold's a private company, and they own the information. So KU, and now the state is saying, and so finally Diebold just recently said, yeah, you can pass the information out. Now the state is saying, well, now it's too close to the next election. So here's just one little piece that KUDO has put out. This is pretty amazing. Just a little voter turnout the vote parody from our affiliate KUDO in Anchorage, Alaska, about the situation in Alaska with the vote.
Here in the Great Land, we understand the importance of big voter turnout. No other state comes close. Why, just last election, not less than 16 Alaska House districts wound up with voter turnout of more than 200%. 200%! Doesn't that make your chest swell with pride? Some claim that exceeding the 100% mark wasn't possible. But Alaskans don't let things like mathematical details stand in their way. We showed them we did it, and with your help, we can do it again. This is about pride. This is about standing tall. This is about being number one, and we are number one. But now is not the time to rest on our laurels. As more states get more voting machines, the pressure to be number one in voter turnout will be greater than ever. So next election on August 22nd, you get out and vote. We need you to get us past the 500% turnout mark. See you at the polls.
We need you to get us past the 500%. See, as more states get DOL machines, you're going to have more states with 200% turnout. So it's great. The competitive spirit there in Alaska. Congratulations, Rich. Great job. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jack in Ashtontown, Ohio. Is that it, Jack?
Ashtontown, Ohio?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah.
You're hey, hi.
In the air. What's up?
Hey, this guy you interviewed a while ago, does he understand that we're talking about a raise for the minimum wage people to keep up with inflation and the cost of living?
Yeah, he understands that. What his worldview suggests is that people should work for whatever the employer offers them, and if they don't like it, they can go someplace else. And if there is no someplace else to go, then they should go to their church and ask for charity, because the government should not be in the business of offering charity, and the government should not be in the business of telling employers how much they can pay.
Or develop more skills, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're talking about going back to the world of Charles Dickens.
Why should Congress get a raise? They haven't developed any skills in the last 6 years.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Jack. Yeah, I'm not sure that David wouldn't agree with you on that point as well. He was not arguing in favor of a congressional pay raise. He was arguing against a minimum wage. And, what brought the issue up was that some Democratic members of Congress said, let's tie the minimum wage to congressional pay raises in one way or another. And that brought the issue up. But, David's position, I didn't hear it, but my guess is that he would be opposed to congressional pay raises as well. So
they should try to survive on $5.15 an hour forever, huh?
That's the conservative theory, yeah.
And, Social Security recipients get bigger raises than that.
Yeah, they at least get the cost of
living. No, we got like 8% this year.
Yep. And that's because the cost of living, or that's because Social Security is actually indexed to a real measure of inflation, whereas the minimum wage is not indexed to anything, and the minimum wage is lower than it's been since 1955. Jack, thanks for the call.
That was just my point. Thank you, Tom.
Bye. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. John in Sacramento, California. Hey, John.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for all you're doing over there.
Sure.
I wanted to shed some light or give my view on this thing about what David was talking about, capital versus labor is what it boils down to me. My father was a shoemaker all his life, starting back in the East Coast and continuing in Southern California. And he had a sandal business in Southern California. He also worked for the state, but on the side he made leather products. And he told me one time, he says, if I put a cowhide out there and buckles and thread and machines to make those sandals, if there isn't the labor there to do it, to make, put it together, he says, what's the big deal? Or what's the shoes aren't going to get made.
Yeah, that was Abraham Lincoln's point when he said labor is superior to capital because it precedes capital. You can't have money until something's made, and you can't have something made until somebody makes it.
Yeah, and it looks like the capitalists look at like they're the Brahmin class or something, and they're up above here, and the laborers are down below them, and it's an unfair.
Yeah, I think that's the fundamental dimension of the conservative worldview that has been there all along and that, frankly, conservatives have historically been proud of. But ever since Ronald Reagan, they've been covering up very well, very effectively, and particularly since Limbaugh have been very effectively covering up, which is that they really believe in a multi-class system, in a hierarchy. They believe in a meritocracy that it's not entirely rigid class structure. I mean, the old European conservatives believe that you should not be able to rise any higher than your parents, right? In other words, they believe in a meritocracy that's hereditary. American conservatives believe in a meritocracy that has to do with, you shouldn't be able to rise any higher than your intellect and your education limit. But what they overlook is the fact that number one, that's relatively unfair in and just on its face, but larger than that, there are large societal issues that determine whether or not somebody is going to have access to education, whether that education, once they have it, is going to do them any good. I mean, there are hotel chains. I remember back when we had the ad agency in Atlanta, I'm pretty sure it was Marriott, one of the big hotel chains was advertising the fact. They'd only did it for a little while because it ended up embarrassing them, but they thought it was, they were trying to get a high-end clientele, advertising the fact that over a third of their bellboys had college degrees. In other words, if you, Mr. Upper-class, white guy, come to our hotel, you're going to be cared for by somebody who has some sense of, propriety and dignity and a good education, blah-de-blah-de-blah. And what it really was revealing was the fact that with a college degree, the best you can do is get a bellboy job right now, large parts of the United States, which is a tragedy.
Yeah, I really feel like, we're all in this together, and it shouldn't be such an adversarial situation, but that's how it turned out in the last 50, 60 years that I'm aware of.
And it goes really all the way back to the founding of America, John, but you're absolutely right. And the "we are all in this together" is the key to the liberal philosophy of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Franklin Roosevelt. No, we're not all in this together. It's I'm going to get mine, and to hell with you. That's the key to the conservative philosophy.
Exactly.
John,
thanks for
the call. Good to hear from you. TJ in Seattle. Hey, TJ, we have about just a little less than a minute before we've got to take a break. Quick point, or you want to go for it, whatever it may be. TJ?
Good morning, Tom.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey. Hey, I wanted to agree quite a little bit with Dave there. I understand his point of view is, you are today where you are based on decisions you made, 2, 3, 4 years ago, and you will be 4 years from now.
TJ, I'd say maybe 20% of where I am is based on the decisions I'd made, and 80% of where I am is based on the fact that my parents both had white skin, that my mother had a college education and my father had a couple of years of college and through the GI Bill, that they grew up middle class in middle class America, that they grew up in a country that was not being invaded, that was not in the middle of a war like people in the Middle East. All those things, I think, frankly, are larger variables in where I am right now than the decisions that I've made.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm totally in his camp.
TJ, I got to ask you to hold on. Can you hang on over this break? Great, because I'd like to continue the conversation. I think it's an important one. It's 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where we dare to ask the questions the mainstream media are afraid of. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Into love of God, nothing to fear. Flame into burn.
And welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. We were talking, I was talking with TJ here when we had to go to a break. And TJ, the point I was making is that, you know, wherever I am in life has so much to do with circumstances around me. The fact that I went to a socialist school, that is a public school system. The fact that my neighborhood was patrolled by a socialist police department, the Lansing, Michigan Police Department. That my home was relatively secure from fire, from the fire department. That, all those things helped me to be, you know, successful as an entrepreneur in middle-class America, basically.
Right, right. And like I said, as what I was talking about, seeing his point of view, I think he's kind of skewed a little bit. I mean, I agree with him only from a business and from a personal growth point of view. However, when it comes to economics, like I agree that you have to have a product that people want, and it's got to have a demand for it, and that's how economic goes. I mean, look at Bill Gates. He has a product that is, that's in just about everybody's household. He's created more millionaires in the Seattle area, and he's able to do a lot of philanthropy out there that is much greater than him as a whole because of what he has done.
Right, but you could also cast Bill Gates as the ultimate welfare queen, because the reason that Bill Gates has been able to accumulate all that money is because government enforces a patent and trademark right, which is the only thing that he has. I mean, basically,
right.
Microsoft owes its existence to the fact, or its profitability, frankly, to the fact that the patent and trademark laws are as solid as they are, as strong as they are, and as wide and broad sweeping as they are, which is far more than they were, say, 50 or 100 years ago. And that has served to enhance the fortunes of Bill Gates. So he's made his money in large part because of government interference in the marketplace.
Well, right, but I mean, that's the same protection that anybody has that goes in and forms a corporation. And I honestly don't believe he didn't do anything different than anybody else did, you know, spying on each other. You know, people want to say he stole software, he stole this idea, that idea. But believe me, if Macintosh or Apple or anything like that was able to, get that information from somewhere else, by all means, they could have.
No, I'm not trying to cast Bill Gates as a villain. What I'm saying is that anybody who adheres to the simplistic notion that it's just hard work and brains that gets you success is missing the fact that there is, from the infrastructure of government, which provides patent and trademark protections to corporations, to the infrastructure of public education, police, fire, and all these other things that provide the life for all of us to be able to be successful in America. There's all this other stuff, and it's just, we just can't reduce it down to it's all about personal responsibility. Personal responsibility is very important, but it's not all about that. TJ, I got
to
move.
And we need to have the economic growth. I mean, look at Ford right now. They're taking jobs and sending them to Mexico. And basically, they're not making a product cheaper and providing a product cheaper to the Americans. They want to increase their bottom line. I mean,
look at
what they're making. They're manufacturing vehicles that run on premium gas. That's not what people want right now.
Yeah, when Ford starts, and General Motors, when they shut down their plants in Flint, Michigan, and move to Mexico, they didn't lower the cost of their cars.
Oh,
They increased the dividends to their shareholders. You know?
Right, and and I think that we actually need to pose a higher tariff when they want to bring that product back into the United States to help pay for these lost jobs and the loss on our economy.
No, I absolutely agree with you, TJ. I think we need to go back to a tariff system, but that's a whole other thing. TJ, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Matt, driving in Ohio. Hey, Matt.
Hey.
What's up?
Oh, not too much. I just been listening here and wanted to comment. I'm driving truck now, but for 12 years I was a local president for United Auto Workers, for a local that represented people that work for different parts suppliers for the big three.
Right.
And going through several contract negotiations, when you get in there and you actually look face to face at the people at the corporate level, I mean, who are the ones who make the decisions on whether or not your plant stays open, the benefits and stuff like that? Those people cannot stand you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've been to Mexico, I've been to several automotive plants in Mexico. And the American workers competing with a government in Mexico that builds the infrastructure for these companies. I mean, there's industrial parks down there that it just dwarfs some of the ones you see in this country. New.
Sure.
The governments are paying
built
for
built and paid for by the government, yeah.
You know, and I mean, we got, in the plant I was in, we had people that went from running one machine to running four, unsafely, in my opinion. And, you know, when a person got a certain age where physically they couldn't keep up, the company just wanted to run them out.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Matt. Absolutely, and well said. We need to protect labor. We need to protect our jobs. You know, and that's my whole tariff riff. Thank you for the call, Matt in Sacramento, California. Hey, Matt, got about a half a minute before we have to wrap up this first hour of the program.
Long enough. Rush made a quote on his program a couple of years back, and what he said, and this is an actual quote, I had it taped. He said that 5% of the people in America are pulling the wagon, and 95% are riding in it.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's like
it's really the other way around.
Built,
you know,
their own pyramids.
I'm sorry?
It's like the pharaohs built their own pyramids.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's kind of the other way around, I think. It's
God
very,
bless. Bye.
Very strange. Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate the call. Amazing. Enduring peace or endless war? Find out with Jeffrey Feldman. Frame Shop is open. Coming up next on the program, and Talk Radio News will be with us at quarter after, and then we'll be going back to your phone calls as well. It's 57 minutes beyond the hour, after the hour, past the hour, here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here, my friends.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Democracy Zone, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 6 minutes past the hour. Every now and then, cool stuff comes flying by us that we like to share with you. This falls into the category of cool goodies. I know we have a lot of listeners. We have a number of radio stations up and down the West Coast and the Pacific Northwest who carry our program, as well as in Seattle, Talk 1090 in Seattle. And so this actually came out of New York, you know, courtesy of Air America Radio. We have 4 tickets to the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young concert tomorrow night at the White River Amphitheater in Seattle. Now, if you're in Seattle, great, or in the area, you can drive there, cool. If you're in some other part of the country and you can get a cheap, quick flight to Seattle for the show, it's tomorrow night, Thursday the 27th at 8 p.m., pack of 4 tickets. The third caller to 866-440-8466 right now will win 4 free tickets to see Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young tomorrow night at the White River Amphitheater in Seattle. Please only call if you will actually use them. And so, anyway, the third caller right now to 866-440-8466. Jeffrey Feldman is with us. He's with Frame Shop is Open. FrameShopIsOpen.com, the website. Hey, Jeffrey.
Hey, Tom.
What are the frames here around peace? I see you blogging, Frame Shop, 3 ways to talk about peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, what I've been doing over the past few days is following the things that Condoleezza Rice has been saying as she's traveling around the Middle East, in theory, on a mission of diplomacy in order to bring about some peace in that region. But it's been really interesting to listen to what she has to say, both disturbing and interesting, because she seems to be talking in a way that runs counter to most people's ideas of what it means to do diplomacy in the world. She's using this peculiar phrase, enduring peace, and a similar phrase, bringing about an enduring ceasefire, to essentially say, look, the United States is not going to back a ceasefire at this time until we know for certain that that ceasefire can last forever. That's a really peculiar logic that she's using, because it seems to be suggesting that from the administration's point of view, and this will probably come as no surprise to a lot of your listeners, war is the permanent state. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to get some peace to happen every now and then, whereas most people would say that peace is the starting off point, war breaks out, and that you want as quickly as possible to get back to that state of peace.
Hmm. It's interesting. It's the metaphor that had immediately come to my mind was something like, by the way, we have a winner of the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young tickets. So if you're calling or if you're on hold, they're gone right now. We will have some more to give away later on the program, though. But anyhow, that's it for right now. The immediate thought that had come to mind for me, Jeffrey Feldman, frameshopisopen.com, was we're not going to have sex unless we know for sure that this particular sexual act is going to produce a baby, kind of thing. It's almost like, you know, situations that involve great uncertainty and a possible outcome should not be engaged in unless the outcome is certain before you begin the act. And yet, you know, creating peace or stopping a war, there's a whole variety of different things that can be done to cause that to happen.
Exactly. But, I mean, one of the things that I suggest that people do, or consider at least, is first of all, pay attention to the type of language that the Bush administration is using, which seems to run against conventional logic as to what diplomacy should be. And in particular, embedded in their idea of diplomacy is the idea that you don't talk to someone unless you're certain of what the outcome of that conversation will be. I think it's really important for progressives, Democrats, Americans in general, to stand up and insist that our government speak to everybody and just go out there and speak to as many people as possible to get the ball rolling. When people are sitting around a table, that's when change happens. The other thing I think is really important to say is, you know, we need to stand up and speak back to this logic that if you keep on pouring military action into the Middle East, that's going to transform the region into a peaceful zone. When you pour war into an area, it leads to, where there wasn't war before, it leads to war. And there's really been what I'm calling this kind of three strikes and you're out logic that we should be bringing to the table. They've already tried this approach several times in the Middle East, and it hasn't worked. I think it's really important for everyday citizens to point that out and start talking about that. No more three strikes, no more attempts in order to bring peace about through war in that region. And then the last thing is this idea of kind of pouring gasoline on the flames in an attempt to put it out. There's a real problem if you're trying to broker peace through diplomacy when the person doing the brokering is supplying a great deal of weapons to one side. And that's not to make a judgment about whether or not the United States should be giving weapons to Israel or having military advising going on in the Middle East. But if you want to broker peace through diplomacy, through talking, now is the time to say, hey, we're going to put a hold on supplying weapons to one side of this battle so that people can actually trust us.
Yeah, although that assumes that the state itself is providing the weapons. Well, actually, in the case of Israel, I guess we are to a large extent, in as much as A, our government has to authorize the sale of advanced weapon systems, and B, much of it is being paid for with foreign aid money.
Exactly. I mean, as far as I understand it, coming from an interview between, I believe it was Tim Russert and Josh Bolton, that Israel has essentially a standing order, an open account, and they are calling on that right now, not that the United States is stepping up at this point and saying we will supply those things. But
There's a consequence to a negative response to that as well. I mean, if you have an ally who is saying, hey, we're in the middle of a conflict and we need more weaponry and you've agreed to give it to us, don't you have an obligation to say to that ally, fine, here it is?
Yeah, I think there's an obligation. I think that, in the broader picture, though, that if the United States wants to be seen as honest brokers of peace, then I think that they need at one point to step back and say, look, we're going to put this on hold right now in order to see if we can't calm things down and see if we can move it forward. That's not in any way to say anything about, you know, investing in the relationship between the United States and Israel, but just to say, look, we're going to really put all of our stock in talking around the table and seeing if we can't get people to calm down.
Yeah, we're talking with Jeffrey Feldman. He's the editor-in-chief at FrameShopIsOpen.com. Jeffrey, the occupation strikes back. We talked some time ago about using the word occupation instead of war with regard to the United States. Now you suggest that the language the Bush administration is using right now indicates that they intend to be occupying Lebanon as well?
Yeah, when I first started listening to Secretary Bryce a couple of days ago, it seemed that she was using very similar language to describe what her ideal outcome for Lebanon was. It was using the phrases that were used to describe Iraq, the language that was used to justify an American occupation there, phrases like assisting the military in order to help them stand up, describing democracy in Lebanon as if it were a small child that needed to be nurtured, using the word help a lot. And it was attached to the proposal that NATO and an international peacekeeping force come into Lebanon. But it struck me that it was laying the groundwork for something that was very similar to what we're seeing over in Iraq. One nation, the United States possibly with one other ally that would be going in there and helping. Now, a lot of people have responded to that piece and said that it really doesn't make any sense for the United States to go in on the ground. And what has happened since I put up that piece is that Israel has struck up a position where they alone are going to occupy or to situate themselves in that stretch of land between southern Lebanon and northern Israel. So,
I believe I read this morning in the New York Times that they say that they're going to do that until it can be taken over by, you know, neutral third parties, presumably the United Nations.
Yeah, I mean I am certainly not can't tell the future of what's happening, but I thought it was really important to point out how the Bush administration is using that language from the Iraq PR campaign, almost like boilerplate language, in their proposal.
Well, it's kind of the only thing they know. They tend to have a small number of tricks in their bag of tricks and just use them over and over again. Finally, you point out some presidents look at a glass and say it's half empty. Others look at a glass and say it's half full. George W. Bush looks at the glass and says,
that glass is a shoe. Yeah, and I was pointing out there's a page that on the White House website, and everybody should go to the website and just look at it once in a while. I read it every single day, but there's a page called Setting the Record Straight. It's more of a series. There's no link off the website, but you'll find it if you look under Recent News, the link on the left. And Setting the Record Straight is essentially the page where the Bush administration turns the color black into the color white through fancy phrasings. It's the place where I say, you know, it's the most Orwellian part of the Bush webpage, and it's fascinating to see how they spin language.
Amazing, and you can check that out over at whitehouse.gov. Although whitehouse.org is also a wonderful, wonderful website.
That's right.
Yeah, got to check that out as well. Jeffrey Feldman, another wonderful website, frameshopisopen.com. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Good speaking with you. Next, an update from the belly of the beast, Washington, D.C., with Talk Radio News Service. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There ain't no relief from this commander-in-chief. He wants his soul to be dirt poor. There ain't no relief from all these corporate thieves as they send your sons and daughters pollute your air and water and send your sons and daughters off to fight on their corporate wars.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change. Hey, let's give away another set of tickets here to this Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young gig. The third caller at 866-440-THOM, 440-8466, courtesy of Air America Radio. Four tickets to tomorrow night's 8 p.m. show at the White River Amphitheater in Seattle. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, their Freedom of Speech Tour. And for the third call right now. And by the way, you got to bring your ID when you show up because you pick these things up at the will call window at the White River Amphitheater. So right now, Victoria Jones, our senior Iraqi woman correspondent, is on the air with us from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Yes, indeed. Nouri al-Maliki, the Iraqi prime minister, addressed a joint session of Congress earlier today. And one of the things that he said was he talked about the status of women in the new Iraq and praised it and how things are going very well. And, you know, this was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it occurred to me to ask Tony Snow about that.
Oh.
In the light of the regular fatwas banning driving or being seen out alone, and mm-hmm. the murdering of professional women and the stoning of women for wearing makeup and the shaving of the heads of women for not wearing scarves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him about it, and, you know, would he acknowledge that there was a problem?
And he said?
Well, he basically referred me to the Iraqis.
Hmm. He kind of accused you of living in the reality-based world. Is that the problem?
I would say so, yeah. He referred me kind of to the Iraqis. He wouldn't acknowledge that there was a problem. He would sort of say that, you know, that they've got an elected government now. And I was sort of asked, well, what does that mean if they can't control the people?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and he said, well, it's not the role of the government to control their people. He clearly knew that I was referring to people who go around raping and murdering, not control in the Nazi-type sense.
Yeah. By the way, let me just tell our callers, we have a winner for the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young tickets. So.
Darn it, I would have liked those.
We have some more that we will give away later on in the program. We have four sets of four of them, 16 tickets we're giving away today.
That is a great prize.
Yeah, it's a nice little promotion, and you know, it's mostly for people in the Pacific Northwest, I suppose, although, you know, there's cheap flights from California as well and from other places in the country if somebody wants to go tomorrow night. So you know, keep listening. We'll give away some more in the next hour.
That's very cool.
Yeah, courtesy of Air America Radio. So, Victoria Jones, what is the state of life for women in Iraq? Is it, I mean, one of the questions that I think is frankly taboo to ask is whether life in Iraq right now is worse than it was under Saddam Hussein. And it seems to me that if you are a member of the political opposition to Saddam Hussein, then life is better, perhaps, depending on which side you were on. But if you were not political, and I suspect most people in Iraq, like most people in America, are not particularly political. You know, they're not political activists all the time. It's not how they define themselves. They you know, they have a job, they have a family, those kind of things. For the average person in Iraq, life has gone to hell, hasn't it?
Life is very difficult. I mean, in many ways, not least of which is not having any electricity for many, many hours of the day. And there are some peaceful areas in Iraq. There are some areas where there isn't much fighting. But for women in Iraq, particularly women in the south, you know, the area that's controlled by the British, the area that is heavily Shiite, this is an area that really is wanting to make it look much more like the neighbor Shiite Iran.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in fact, in the most peaceful areas, they are the areas where there is the strongest enforcement of Sharia law, because they're peaceful by virtue of the fact that the local tribal authorities or the local historic Islamic authorities have taken control.
Right. Right. So what we have is a certain amount of rule by terror. I mean, I think for some women things are fine, but they don't feel safe going out. Certainly you don't feel safe letting your children go out because they get kidnapped. And they get kidnapped for money.
That's right. Kidnapping for money has now become a major industry in Iraq.
Which is terrifying.
It's incredible. I remember the first time I was in Bogota, Colombia, and staying with some friends, staying with some people, and a neighbor of theirs came over who had been kidnapped for money, the wife of an American businessman. And they knew before they kidnapped her how much money he had. They knew what bank it was in. I mean, they had somebody in the inside. They knew all the details. And they would call him up and have her screaming in the background and say, you know, there's still $3,000 left in your checking account, and you still have $20,000 on your line of credit, and you haven't maxed out this credit card, and all this stuff, until they completely exhausted every penny this family had, and then they finally gave her back. It took about 2 months.
What a nightmare.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, she was seriously traumatized by it. And through the whole thing, she thought she was going to die. And it's just a major industry in Bogota. And this is something that you find in a lot of countries where poverty is rampant and there's opportunity for a criminal underclass to grow, or a criminal overclass, really, in some ways, as a consequence of it. It's the old mafia thing. It, when you don't have a middle class, you end up with a criminal class. Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks for being with us, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you today. It's 27 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The crucifix ain't no baseball bat. Tell me what kind of thought is that? Ain't nothing more godless than a war. So what are we fighting for?
And welcome back to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Just a reminder that Monday night, I will be in Seattle and doing at a fundraising gig for Congressman Jim McDermott with former President Bill Clinton. And it's going to be a hoot. It's going to be an absolute hoot. Benaroya Hall, 7 p.m. Tickets start at $50. This, as I said, this is a fundraiser. And the website is McDermottForCongress.com. M-C, Dermott, D-E-R-M-O-T-T, for F-O-R, Congress.com for information and tickets and all that kind of thing. So I'll be doing the program here, and then I'll be hopping on a plane and flying up to Seattle, and we will do that on Monday night. And then Tuesday I'll be doing the program live from the radio station in Seattle, our Seattle affiliate, KTPK, Talk 1090, and then coming home. And, in fact, Friday this week, I'll be doing this program live from our affiliate in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Clear Channels WTKG, and looking forward to that as well. So lots going on. Our phone number, 866-440-8466. If you want to drop into our live chat room or participate in our blog or message board, go to tomhartman.com. However you spell it, will get you there. And just pick the link you want up at the top of the page or down the side. And also, if you're interested in any of my books, just scroll down a ways. They're all right there. One of the things that is, frankly, I think one of the most important issues, perhaps... I was going to say perhaps the most important issue. I don't want to underestimate or underemphasize it. On the other hand, I don't want to, you know, sound histrionic or hyperbolic about this. But one of the most important issues that's facing us right now is network neutrality with regard to the Internet. The Internet is the last great leveling force. Whether it was the Internet being used to level Dan Rather by the, you know, the blogger down in Atlanta who suggested that Rather was using a badly sourced or perhaps forged documents to bolster his argument, which was otherwise very well made, that George W. Bush had been AWOL and was a deserter, not Rather's words, but mine. Or whether it's the Internet being used to set the record straight on the many crimes of the Bush administration, the Internet has become the great leveler. It's become the great BS filter. You can't slip stuff past people with the Internet out there. You know, whether it's a talk show host or whether it's a politician or whether it's a company making products or whether it's, you know, whatever it may be, it gets out in the blogosphere, it gets out there on the Internet, and it gets real. And you've got this substantial and weird coalition of very large telecommunications companies, AT&T, Verizon, you know, the companies that basically own the pipes, to paraphrase Ted Stevens, the senator from Alaska, that own the data channels over which much of the Internet passes. You've got them on the one hand saying that net neutrality is dumb, the idea that anybody can put up a website and it'll load just as fast as any other website, and that there are no rules about it beyond the rules having to do with things that are, you know, legislated, you know, child pornography, things like that. But by and large, there's no rules to the Internet. In other words, if you want to put up a website and say nasty things on it, have obscenity on it, you know, legal obscenity, again, you know, there are these rules of society. But outside the bounds of the normal rules of society, there are no rules for the Internet. You can do it. You can find some company that will host it, or for that matter, you can go down to your local computer store and buy a cheap $400 computer and plug it into a high speed internet connection, and boom, you know, run it like a server. You're on the web. And a lot of people have built a lot of businesses out of their bedroom or out of their home office by being on the web. And so these big companies have come along and they've said, you know, we ought to be able to say, if you want your web page to load fast, you have to pay us more. Otherwise, your web page is going to load slow. And beyond that, we should be able to have some say in the content. And there's a marvelous piece that James Glass wrote over at newsforge.com. It's at business.newsforge.com. And the online newspaper for Linux and open source users. And it's titled, Today's Cell Phone System Argues for Retaining Network Neutrality. And this is brilliant. He says, you know, the folks like Verizon and whatnot, they're saying, hey, you know, nobody knows what it's going to be like when we do away with net neutrality and we have a world, as it were, where big corporations get to decide how fast web pages load and what the rules are to get on the internet if you want to be on the fast track of the internet, you know, where you've got a two-tiered internet, a fast and a slow internet. They say, nobody knows. Trust us. Everything will be fine, is essentially what they're saying. But James Glass says, no. It turns out, he says, that we have a privately owned and controlled network all around us, one that closely mirrors the technical functionality of the internet, but where there's never been a requirement for net neutrality. What's that? The U.S. cellular phone network. Now, he's not talking about cell phone telephone calls. He's talking about SMS, short message service, text messaging. He says almost all cell phones sold in the developed world have the ability to send and receive SMS. SMS, short message service, or text messaging. SMS is gaining popularity in the U.S., but only as a way to send quick messages to friends. So why, if you have this system, this SMS system, why aren't there a wealth of amazing and interactive services available for mobile devices? Why is there no MySpace, no Craigslist, no Amazon, no Flickr, no eBay accessible through this SMS network? Why can't you pay bills on it? Why can't you raise money for charities using SMS? Why can't you politically organize using SMS? It's simple, writes James Glass, because the cell phone carriers control what services are allowed to use their networks. There is no net neutrality on the cell phone network. He says, imagine you want to create a user-moderated news service. Right? Dig.com or CommonDreams.org or OpEdNews.com, BuzzFlash.com, anything like that, that operates on SMS. This short message service, text messages on the cell phone system in the United States. On the neutral internet, you rent a web server, right? $7 to $100 a month to start. Register your name and start programming. Total time required, less than 2 hours. But if you want to get a similar service on the non-neutral U.S. cell phone network in SMS, it would be a little different. He says the first step would be to contact a company known as an aggregator. This company manages your relationships with the cell phone carriers, and that's carriers plural, because making an agreement with just one carrier ensures that your service will fail because it cannot effectively spread via word of mouth. The first requirement from an aggregator, a service charge, typically $1,000 a month. Then you must buy a short code. This is the equivalent of a URL. It's your website name. That's an additional $500 to $1,000 a month. Now, there are people who do this. You know, I like to watch Monk and the TV show on USA Network, and they've got this thing now. Hey, you want to get a Monk alert? Text message us at this number. And they give out a five-digit number. And then they send you messages. Okay, they went through these steps. They jumped through these hoops. They say the next step is satisfying the requirements of the cell phone companies. Many of these steps, such as requiring affirmative opt-in before a subscription can start, are not particularly burdensome and serve to protect the carrier's customers. Others, however, border on ludicrous. Requirements vary by carrier, but some prohibit operators from offering games or sweepstakes, or require that subscription periods can only be monthly, not daily, weekly, or yearly. Others require that content, such as ringtones, be locked so users can't forward them from their phones or their friends to their friends' phones. Other requirements are outright offensive, writes James Glass. As of this writing, he says, Singular, Sprint, Nextel, T-Mobile, and Verizon all prohibit charities from raising money through their premium SMS services. Too bad for the United Way, Greenpeace, and the Red Cross. Some carriers also have decency restrictions. that are so silly and restrictive that they make the production code that governed movies between 1934 and 1967 seem quaint. Verizon is the worst offender in this case. It prohibits dating services, images that are suggestive, which you could see on primetime network television, and the use of crude words, including such shockers as fornicate and genital. These words are banned from the SMS systems. After you make your application compliant to the carrier's requirements, you then must wait weeks or months for the carriers to approve it and jump through more hoops if they reject your application, which they can do for any or no reason. This, writes James Glass, is the sad state of affairs and what we believe lies ahead if we let commercial interests take control of the Internet. Thus,
may take a week, may take longer.
Activism alert for the day. Call your member of Congress, your senator, and or your member of the House of Representatives and say, I want net neutrality, and I want to know where you stand on net neutrality. Toll-free number 888-355-3588 all across the United States. 888-355-3588. And just say, net neutrality. I want it. And I want to know your position on it. Give them a call. And then let us know what your member of Congress says so that we can talk about it on the air. We can publicize it here. 45 minutes past the hour is the Tom Hartman radio program. We'll be back with your calls and more news after this. Exposing the con in conservative.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone. 9.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Our old friend Medea Benjamin just got busted. Joint session of Congress interrupted as she was dragged out. She got up and yelled at Nuri al-Maliki's during his speech. She yelled, Iraqis want the troops to leave. Bring them home now. And she's right. According to a poll in January, 87% of Iraqis, this from a summary over at Think Progress, 87% of Iraqis support a U.S. timetable for withdrawal. The Iraqi president, the Iraqi vice president, and the Iraqi national security advisor have all advocated a timetable for the withdrawal of U.S. troops, and 52% of the American people want a withdrawal within 12 months. But Medea Benjamin of Code Pink got busted for it and dragged out. By the way, we have a comment line in addition to our regular call line. You're welcome to call into the program at 866-440-8466. But some folks don't like to go on the air live. They'd rather leave a message, as it were. Our comment number, 503-323-6620. Give us your take in 30 seconds or less. Just remember, your thoughts and opinions may make it on the air. So make it count. 503-323-6620. Here's our most recent one. And it would help if I turned it up, wouldn't it?
Tom, I think you missed the point when you talked about Republicans or corporations. The real issue is that there are a few thousand individuals who basically own this country and probably own the world, and then a few million of their lieutenants. And the problem is that they're taking the whole pie. They're not content to just let people have a slice they can live on and then still get super rich. The problem is that they want the whole. I don't care if people are scraping just to get by.
Yeah, and I'm not going to disagree with that. I think that, and I think that there's a certain sociopathy associated with it. Anthony in Seattle, Washington, on the line. Hey, Anthony, what's on your mind today?
I wanted to respond to the conservative talk guy earlier who was saying that instead of raising the minimum wage, you just got to get more education.
Mm-hmm.
But that flies in the face of reality where someone has to take out the trash, and someone's got to cook the food, and no matter what the education of the society is, these jobs need to be done, and they need to be paid a decent wage.
Right. That's a really important point to make, and it's one that I had I knew that, and I spaced it. That's great, Anthony. You're absolutely right. And beyond that, I mean, we should consider these as jobs that have dignity. I mean, historically,
exactly.
We have. In fact, in many cases, they've been good union jobs, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent point. Anthony, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Patricia in Sacramento, California. Hey, Patricia, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I wanted to get your opinion on an article I read on AlJazeera.com, and it's dated July 21st. And if I could quote a small phrase in here, the Lebanon resistance movement Hezbollah would be used by the U.S. as a pretext for military action against Iran, according to an editorial on the Asia Times. I wanted to know what your perspective is on that, because I've been hearing that also from other articles in the Sunday Times of London, where they're foreseeing, you heard Bush lately say he was going to be putting more troops into Iraq to stabilize Iraq.
Yeah.
But a lot of these articles are saying they're doing this to be able to move the soldiers quickly into Iran, and that this is kind of their opportunity. You know, you remember right before Iraq, you know, we had that opportunity. 9/11 happened, and then we started with the mushroom cloud, and Saddam Hussein is a ruthless leader, and we need to get rid of him, blah, blah, blah. But
right.
It's like this is kind of the same thing. And the only reason I'm concerned, Tom, is that also, if you remember in the last year, journalists like Seymour Hersh and former Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter has also been saying that based on their White House sources that they're going to go into Iran. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, that's what I was going to point out to you in agreement with you. Here's the difference, though. Cy Hirsch actually did the best job of outing this, and he did it, what, 6-8 months ago in, as I recall, The New Yorker? Maybe it was Vanity Fair. Seymour Hersh wrote a piece in which he talked about the war planning that's going on, the war gaming and planning that's going on in the White House or in this administration in Iran. The difference is that what they have learned from their experience with Iraq, and thank you for the call, Patricia, what they've learned from their experience with Iraq is that ground forces, not a good plan, not a good idea. And so they're kind of left with this, you know, what do we do? And my guess is that they're looking for an excuse to drop these low power nuclear weapons that they've been talking about developing, or high power conventional weapons on Iran. That there's this weird philosophy among the neocons in Washington D.C. And what's weird about it is that they forget that democracy requires a middle class and that democracy has to grow from the bottom up. And they think somehow they've got like half the equation right. You know, that democracy is a good thing and that democracy is a natural state. But because they're conservatives, they don't really believe in democracy. They really believe in a meritocracy, an aristocracy of the wealthy, an aristocracy of the wise and the thinkers and that kind of thing. It's a John Adams kind of, or Alexander Hamilton kind of democracy, not quite the Thomas Jefferson or George Washington kind of democracy that they're talking about, first of all. But secondly, they have this idea that if they just shake things up, then everything will fall into place. You know, it's sort of like those little balls with the winter figures and the phony snow, you know, and the little glass globe with the water in it. And you shake it, and everything kind of stirs up, and then the snow just all settles, and everything's just fine. And they're operating on the assumption that if they shake things up badly enough, that what will shake out is democracy. And tragically, it ain't the case. That's not what happens. It's not what actually usually shakes out if you go in and bust up a country like that, is the rise of radicalism, particularly religious radicalism. And we're seeing it. We've seen it in Iraq. We've seen it in other territories. 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Turns out Maryland Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele was the Republican that the Washington Post yesterday was quoting anonymously as saying that the Iraq War, quote, didn't work, end quote, and lamenting, quote, the spending, the finger-pointing, and not getting the bills passed, end quote, in Congress, and counseled Congress to, quote, just shut up and get something done, end quote. Michael Steele, the Republican Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, running for the United States Senate from Maryland against a Democrat who, in all probability, would have and will win in any regard. But the interesting kind of rest of the story on this is you will recall, those of you who are longtime listeners to this program, you will recall that a year ago, I was suggesting that Bush had so badly bungled Iraq and had so, well, I lack a word for it, you know, in our face, so insolently, so with little regard for public opinion, pushed through things like the Clear Skies Initiative and the No Child Left Behind and you know, more mercury in our air and more arsenic in our water and the Healthy Forest Initiative. Let's cut down trees to save trees and undone a whole huge pile of rules that the Clinton era had put through to protect the environment, refused to go along with Kyoto, global warming. I mean, this is all aside from the Iraq War. Tried to privatize Social Security, tried to take a meat axe to Medicare, made it very, very clear to Americans where his passions and interests lie. That is, that he views the, you know, as he says, the haves and the have-mores as his base, as his real base. Now, he's been able to successfully pander to some Christian cultists, people who believe in the cult of the rapture, a word which, by the way, does not appear in the Bible. It's just in the last 150 years or so that word has come into currency. But he's been able to appeal to them with his idea of let's whip up things in the Middle East. He's been able to appeal to homophobic Joe Sixpack with his anti-gay agenda, wedge agenda. And by the way, just a news update, the state of Washington's Supreme Court this morning released the ruling that when the voters of the state of Washington passed, I believe it was an initiative, I believe it was a referendum, it was one of those things that Republicans put on the ballot to get people to come out and vote. You know, they really don't care if it passes or not, or maybe they do, I don't know, but they think it'll get people out to vote, and so while they're there, they will vote for Republicans that otherwise they wouldn't have cared that much about. It's a major part of the Republican strategy to put these weird things on the ballot that are basically, you know, they're coming to get you. The gays are going to get you. Look out. And so, anyhow, this ballot initiative that said that marriage was between a man and a woman. In other words, basically outlawing gay marriage. And the state of Washington the Supreme Court of the state of Washington has ruled that this is, in fact, consistent with the Constitution of the state of Washington. And the reason why being the rationale, I haven't read the entire ruling, but the news reports indicate that the rationale that the Supreme Court used is that because marriage can produce children, and children have some impact on society, the presence of them, or they could become a burden on society if they're not cared for appropriately. Therefore, society has a legitimate role in regulating the institution of marriage, which brings about children. Now, you know, I think it's pretty easy to poke some holes in that. You could say, okay, does that mean that people who are infertile should not be allowed to marry? That there should be a fertility test? Does that mean that if somebody's been married 5 years and they haven't had a child yet, that their marriage should be null and void? There's a whole bunch of different ways that you could take that thing apart. But in any case, that's how they ruled. And so that's the situation right now. But back to my original point about Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, the Republican from Maryland. He was complaining about this, and as I said a year ago, the day will come when the Republicans are going to point back at their own behavior, and they're going to characterize it as George Bush's behavior, and they are going to run against it. This is nothing new. I made this prediction a year ago that you would see Republicans this fall running against Bush and in some ways against the Republican Party. And the reason it was so easy to make the prediction a year ago was because Harry Truman said it in 1950. Or maybe it was 48. One or the other. I have the audio clip of it around here someplace. I'll play it for you one of these days. But Harry Truman, he said, it's an even year. Therefore, it's one of those years where for about 6 months, the Republicans start talking like Democrats. Because they know they can never win on their own platform, which is soak the middle class and enrich the rich. Create a corporate aristocracy and anti-democratic institutions. They could never win on that. Now, I'm no longer quoting Harry Truman. I'm now quoting me. They couldn't win on that, so they've got to win by sounding like Democrat. All of a sudden, the Republicans are in favor of improving education. All of a sudden, the Republicans are in favor of Social Security. They're in favor of Medicare, these programs brought to you by Democrats. And it has begun. And I think that the outing of Michael Steele as the source of this quote, which he shared with either 7 or 9 reporters in a restaurant in Washington, D.C., where apparently during the meeting, Bill Frist even came over and said to the reporters, hey, this guy's a good guy, not realizing that he was sitting there trashing Frist and the other Republicans. Of course, Bill Frist is not running for re-election either. I mean, he wants to be president someday, but he's not running for re-election. So it has begun. It has begun. And it will get worse. You're going to see more and more Republicans basically saying, I'm my own man. I'm an independent Republican. I'm a compassionate conservative. I'm different from the rest of them. And it's just a ploy. But they will do it. They will, you know, I guarantee you, they will be doing it. They will be doing it. Speaking of the screw-ups of the Bush administration, and which highlights the need for us to get, you know, some adults in charge in Washington, D.C., and I really think this is important that we do get some adults in charge in Washington, D.C. This from Reuters. The Bush administration's tacit support for Israeli military strikes on Lebanon may have increased the danger of militant retaliation against the United States and U.S. interests abroad, some experts say. U.S. and European authorities have stepped up vigilance against groups including Hezbollah, which intelligence experts say has cells in North America, South America, Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Middle East. Israel's attempt to cripple Hezbollah in Lebanon may have strengthened the Shiite organization by winning it fresh political support among Arabs and Muslims, former officials and other experts say. This is not an op-ed piece. This is a news story from Reuters. And, you know, I'm telling you, the terrorist groups, in quotes, want Republicans in power because they know that they'll dance with them. You know, it's like the reason why Osama bin Laden put out a tape in November of 2004, just before the presidential elections, attacking George Bush, was because he knew it would help George Bush. He does not want somebody in power who's going to seriously track him down as a criminal and bring him to justice. What he wants is somebody who thinks that this is about the wars of civilizations and got to bring the rapture about. And this is the end of the days. Somebody who shares his worldview, in other words. See, George W. Bush is a guy that Osama bin Laden can do business with. And certainly his family has over the last 30 years. But he's a guy that he wants to have as the opponent. Because, well, why? Well, because he's still around. I mean, George W. certainly has not gone out and tracked him down dead or alive. After all.
So I don't know where he is. Nor, you know, I just don't spend that much time on him, really, to be honest with you. Again, I don't know where he is. I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Yeah. Yeah. See, so this is what Bush wants, or this is what bin Laden wants, is they want a continuation of Republican control in the United States. That's what the terrorists want. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if this Reuters report is right, that we are now at increased risk from a terrorist attack inside the United States or American interests outside the United States. Because, you know, that's what they want. They want more Republican control. And tragically, that may be what they may get. Michael Scheuer, the former CIA counterterrorism official who ran the agency's Bin Laden unit, he says even Al-Qaeda itself may be ready with an attack, and they may choose to use it now. The election's coming up, 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Engine number 9, machine guns on the New York transit lines. The war for oil is a war for the beast. The war on terror is a war on peace. Telling you they're gonna protect you, and telling you if they support the troops, and don't let them fool you with the milk and honey. No, they only want your money. One step forward and two step back. One step forward and two step back. Why the veterans get no respect? PTSD and a broken back. Take a look at where your money's gone. See, take a look at what they spend it on. No excuses, no illusions. Light up your lighter, bring them home so we keep it on.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, no respect for the veterans. We're going to be talking with Larry Scott of VAWatchdog.org in just a moment. First, the third caller to our toll-free number, 1-866-440-8466, can win three tickets to the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Yeah, four tickets, if I said that wrong. If it's a set of four tickets to the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young concert at the White River Amphitheater in Seattle tomorrow, Thursday the 27th at 8 p.m. To win a four-pack of tickets, be the third caller right now. Winners will receive four tickets courtesy of Air America Radio to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the Freedom of Speech Tour, to be picked up at the White River Amphitheater will call window. Don't forget your ID or you won't be able to get your tickets. And I see the board is slammed right now with calls. Larry Scott with VAWatchdog.org on the line. Hey, Larry, good morning.
Hi, Tom. I'll tell you what. I'll take those tickets and drive all the way to Seattle.
I'm sorry. I think you fall into that category of people affiliated with or whatever. You know, it's
I forgot.
And you're not the third caller. You know, it's
that's true. That's true.
Yeah, you were the first actually. No, we called you.
There you go.
VAWatchdog.org for our listeners. And by the way, we have a winner for the contest. So if you're trying to call in, you can stop right now. VAWatchdog.org, one of the premier websites, if not the premier website on the entire internet for information about what's going on for veterans and with the Veterans Administration, about the Veterans Administration. Interesting piece, interesting article right up at the very top today here, Larry Scott, editor-in-chief, publisher, chief cook and bottle washer over there at VAWatchdog.org. Give them a little and say it's a lot, Stephen Bouyer.
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting because I was listening, and just before the break, you were talking about Republicans sounding like Democrats as we get closer and closer to the election.
Yeah, Harry Truman, actually.
Right, and we see a lot of that when it comes to veterans issues. You know, I support veterans, and we're passing legislation. And what prompted this little piece I did was that yesterday the House passed, it was H.R. 3082. It's called the Veterans Small Business and Memorial Affairs Act of 2006, and that sounds very, very boring. But you're going to find politicians making hay out of this, and they're going to be using this on the campaign trail. I voted for more education and more jobs and more small business contracts for veterans, and I support veterans. And that all sounds very, very good. But what I did was I took this act and all the provisions, and I tore it apart and found out that there really is very little, if anything, to it. What the act actually is a whole list of reauthorizations, reclarifications, a bunch of requirements and unfunded mandates that are aimed at other government agencies and also bounce back on the states. Mm-hmm. And while the act does have good provisions and it will help a very small number of veterans who fall into very specialized categories, it is not the great veterans benefits package that that is being touted on Capitol Hill. And what it does, of course, and we've talked about this so many times, Tom, it absolutely ignores the funding crisis at the Department of Veterans Affairs, with the veterans waiting months and sometimes even years for necessary surgeries. So it is a nice little political ploy. It's a great look. If people want to go to VAWatchdog.org, it's right at the top of the page. And I also include in there a link to how to see how your representatives actually vote. They're going to talk big, but when it comes down to what they really do, you're going to want to have the facts. We've got all the links so you can track back and see how your senator, your congressman voted on various veterans issues over the last few years.
At VAWatchdog.org.
Yeah. Do they support vets? Do they not support vets? Let's not listen to what they say. Let's track what they do.
Here's a question for you, Larry Scott. We just have a minute left.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Boyer, he's a Republican who is the head of the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House of Representatives.
Yes.
Why, if he has worked so hard to become the head of the Veterans Affairs Committee and he says that he supports veterans, why is he doing this halfway stuff? Why?
Because he answers to the party, and his party says don't do that. Remember, Boyer took over for Representative Chris Smith of New Jersey, who was a Republican. And at the beginning of last year, Chris Smith lost his job when he came out and publicly supported, in a government press release, full and mandatory funding for VA health care. Within a few days, he was gone.
So this goes back to the philosophy that what we're talking about here, and when we're talking about really supporting vets, is something that the Republicans call socialism.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
right.
It. And so they know that they can't say that out loud. And so what they do is they do the cosmetic stuff, and in the back they've got a knife behind their back, and they're cutting away at the budget.
And in the back, the budget gets cut. It is chronically underfunded. It just keeps staying that way, Tom. And it's really sad, but they're, what comes down from up above is what they do.
That's a tragedy. Larry Scott, VAWatchdog.org, the website. Larry, thanks for being with us today.
Tom, thank you so much.
Good talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. Truth in Broadcasting. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Amazing. Now, we were talking about Harry Truman in the last segment. I just have to share with you a couple little clips. Then we're going to talk with David Bender of politicallydirectradio.com, and we're going to give away another couple tickets to the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young concert in a few minutes. Not yet. But here, this is Harry Truman, March 29th, 1952, talking about exactly what we've been talking about for the last 2 hours here.
Now, I want to say something very important to you about this issue of morality in government. It is just as immoral to use the lawmaking power of the government to enrich the few at the expense of the many as it is to steal money from the public treasury. That is stealing money from the public treasury. Legislation that favored the greed of monopoly and the trickery of Wall Street was a form of corruption that did the country four times as much harm as Teapot Dome ever did.
And he just gets in a full rant here on this thing, and it goes on for a little bit. I will share it at some length with you a little later on, but here's how he wraps it up. Harry Truman talking about how he earlier says every year that ends with an even number, the Republicans start behaving like Democrats and start talking like black is white and white is black. And up is down, and down is up. And he says he doesn't think it's going to work.
Well, I don't think the black is white campaign of the Republican Party is going to succeed. I think the voters are going to see through this holier-than-thou disguise that our Republican friends are putting on. All the tricks of Republican propaganda cannot make the people forget that the Democratic Party has been working for their welfare.
There you go. Well said. And David Bender is with us with politicallydirectradio.com, the website. He's the host of Politically Direct on the weekends on Air America Radio. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. Great to have you with us. And,
it's great to be here. You know, following Harry Truman.
Yeah. Well,
quite exciting, actually.
I thought it was an appropriate segue.
Well, you know, listening to him give people hell, it's amazing to me that I can't think of a Democrat who talks like that today.
Yeah, and what's amazing is they used to get on him for it. You know, they called him Give 'em Hell Harry, and he once said, I don't give people hell, I just tell the truth and they think it's hell.
They think it's hell. It's exactly yeah. Right. But you know what? How hard would it be for any Democrat to stand up and say the same exact thing about black being white and about, you know, what Republicans are doing to distort the truth? How hard would that be?
Yeah, I think that it would be fairly easy, fairly straightforward, in fact, right now. I mean, here, let me just give you another 20 seconds of Harry Truman,
please.
If I may, David. Here you go.
Do they come out and vote with us to keep the special interests from robbing the public? Not at all. Most of them are on the other side. Same thing when you come to the question of the conduct of government officials. The Republicans make a great whoop and holler about the honesty of federal employees, but they are usually the first to show up in a government office asking for special favors for private interests and in raising Cain if they don't get them.
There you go. Give him hell, Harry.
One amazing guy. Well,
he really was.
It's also a study in contrast between articulate presidents.
Yes, indeed. By the way, I want to thank you for facilitating our giving away of these Crosby, Stills,
Nash. Oh, I'm thrilled you can do it. That's great.
And in fact, we've got one more set of four tickets, and we'll do it right now. The third caller into 866-440-8466 will win four tickets to the Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young tour, which David and I are going to be talking about in just a second, tomorrow night at the White River Amphitheater in Seattle, courtesy of Air America Radio and the White River Amphitheater, tomorrow night, Thursday the 27th at 8 p.m. You please only call if you can actually use these tickets. If you can either hop on a quick plane to Seattle or you live in that area, and you have to pick the tickets up at will call. So Lauren, when she takes your call, will get all your information and it'll make it work. So tell us about this tour.
Tom, let me tell you, it is an amazing show. And anyone who, I've seen people getting on planes from all over the country to come to some of the shows that have already happened. I'm in San Francisco this morning. There was a show at the Concord Amphitheater last night. And this is the third tour Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young have done in the last 6 years. But I have to tell you, I know members of this band. I've been privileged to work with them on causes and on issues for 25 years. And this is far and away the most political tour they've ever done. It's called the Freedom of Speech Tour. And I got to tell you, people walking in will see something that they rarely see on a stage. I mean, you're seeing no mincing of words from all of them. Now, Neil Young has an album that came out earlier this year called Living with War.
Yeah, and by the way, let me just interrupt you for a moment, David, and let our listeners know that we have a winner for the tickets, and that's the last of the tickets we'll be giving away today because we're out of them now. But it's great that we were able to do that.
That's terrific, and again, they're going to see an amazing show. Well, this Living with War album, which I still call them, CD, is something Neil wrote in literally 3 days, Tom. And he wrote it, he hit his tipping point about seeing the images that were coming back from Iraq. And he wrote a group of songs that really are, it's a theme album. The core of which is a song that they do in the show called Let's Impeach the President.
Mm-hmm. And for lying.
For lying. and there's more. Let's impeach him for a lot of other reasons. And
yeah.
And here's the beauty of it. Here's what I got to tell you. It's something that, it goes back to the old sing-alongs. The lyrics to this are put up on the big screens, and everybody is singing along. And you haven't lived until you've been with 15,000 people singing full-throated, Let's Impeach the President.
Wow. Now, David Bender, you and I know that there is a groundswell of support in America to impeach George W. Bush.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that I have found most fascinating is that about 3 months ago, or 4 months ago, thereabouts, somewhere around that time, the Republicans started this absolutely breathless, hysterical, the Democrats, the party of impeachment, right? I'm on all their email lists for two reasons. One, because I'm a talk show host, and second, because every year I give $5 to the GOP, so just to get all their junk, and because I figure it's going to cost them more than $5 to send it to me. So
smart move.
Yeah. Well, someday somebody's going to say, that Hartman, he says he's a liberal, but he's actually a donor to the GOP. I've got proof. So I tell everybody right up front. You know,
Hillary Clinton is on their mailing list. She frequently gets their mail as well.
Yeah, she probably does the same thing. But in any case, I for about 3 or 4 weeks there, I was getting, maybe a month there, every single day I was getting something from the RNC or one of their allied groups talking about how they had to stop the Democrats because if the Democrats got into office, they would impeach the president. And then all of a sudden, just literally in one day, it came to a screeching halt. Just like that. And the Republicans have not mentioned it since then. And I have a few sources, shall we say, inside the Republican Party, people who I know who are politically savvy, who are connected to folks inside the Republican Party. And I started poking around, asking, you know, what's the deal here? You know, what happened? Turns out, they did, and I don't know how formal this was. I don't know if this was, you know, they commissioned a Zogby poll or whether this was just Frank Luntz doing his focus groups or what. I don't know. But it turns out that they started asking people, apparently average voters, including Republicans, do you think that George W. Bush should be impeached? And the majority of people were saying, we think that there should be hearings about it. Yes.
It's exactly right.
And so all of a sudden, the Republicans got frightened and stopped talking about it because they realized that that more than half of Americans do not object and, in fact, would support, at the very least, what John Conyers with House Resolution 635 calls for, an inquiry into whether or not crimes have been committed that rise to the level of impeachability.
Absolutely.
By this president. And what amazes me, David Bender, and maybe you can advise me on this, because I haven't been able to get through to any of these, the folks that I know, and I talk to them on the radio fairly regularly and know a few of them, you know, aside from that, is that the Democratic Party hasn't picked this thing up and run with it.
Well, you know, we go back to how we started, which is Harry Truman, which is, you know, you have people who are playing, you know, if it were football, they'd be playing to gain, you know, a yard.
They'd be playing touch football against the Green Bay Packers.
fair point. You know, it's an even stronger analogy. And in fact, what we're seeing is the results of that in election after election. It's what John Kerry did. It is exactly the politics of caution, and working around the margins and trying to find just, you know, something that can swing maybe 15,000-20,000 votes in a selected area of a key swing state is not the way to lead.
Yeah.
And what we've seen time and time again is that people are looking for authenticity. They're looking for people to speak their mind. And they, you know, frankly, and you know, it's the argument I used to make. I grew up in California. It's the argument I made about Ronald Reagan, which is that had he run as a Democrat, he would have been elected as well. It was not about his ideology. It was about the fact that people, regardless of, you know, what they thought of his opinions, thought he believed them.
Yeah.
And
in fact, he did, because they were so simple. I mean, he was a true believer. We have about a half a minute left, David. What's your call to action for folks?
Well, my call to action, aside from going to the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young show, which will get you fired up and ready to go out and speak truth to power, because that's what this show does. And it's Ohio, and it's Find the Cost of Freedom, as well as the songs from Living with the War. My call to action is that people actually need to believe in the possibility that we're going to take back power. The minute they believe that, it's going to happen.
Yeah, and then I'd say the second step would be show up at the local Democratic Party meeting. Get out there, get involved, or the Green Party, or the Republican Party, for that matter.
Absolutely.
Let's take back our political discourse. Yep, well said. David Bender, politicallydirectradio.com, the website. He does the program Politically Direct on weekends on Air America Radio. A great guy, good friend. David, thank you so much for being on the program with us.
Tom, my pleasure. Thank you.
Great talking with you. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Burning up the atmosphere and cutting down the trees. The billion-dollar bombing of a nation on his knees. Anyone not marching to their tune, they call it treason. Everyone says God is on his side. see the lightning, hear the cries of the wounded in a world in holy war. Mortal thunder from the sky, killing everything they say they're fighting for.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman radio program. Just a reminder, Monday night, this coming Monday, I will be in Seattle doing a fundraiser for Congressman Jim McDermott with former President Bill Clinton. I'll be emceeing the evening. It starts at 7 p.m. It'll be at Benaroya Hall, and you have to have advance tickets. And the way to get them is to go to McDermottForCongress.com, McDermott, D-E-R-M-O-T-T, for Congress, F-O-R-Congress.com. Or you can call 206-903-0148, 206-903-0148, if you'd like to show up next Monday night. Should be a lot of fun. Just a little bit more of Harry Truman. We just have to hear a little bit more Harry Truman, and then we'll pick up your phone calls here.
Private, selfish interests are always trying to corrupt the government in this way. Powerful financial groups are always trying to get favors for themselves. Now, the Democratic administration has been fighting against these efforts to corrupt the powers of government. We haven't always won, but we have never surrendered, and we never will. For all these years, we've been fighting to use our natural resources for the benefit of the public, to develop our forests and our public oil reserves and our water power for the benefit of all, to raise the incomes of all our citizens, to protect the farmer and the worker against the power of monopoly. And where have the Republicans been in this fight for morality in government? Do they come out and vote with us to keep the special interests from robbing the public? Not at all. Most of them are on the other side.
There you go. Harry Truman, 1-866-440-8466, our number. Bill in Seattle. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. Harry Truman's words are so awe-inspiring, and I wish more Democrats would speak up directly and forcefully as he did. You know, one Democrat comes to mind immediately. Jim McDermott has spoken up like that, and I appreciate your efforts on his behalf. What did he get for it? He gets slammed down by right-wing media. He's a traitor. He's a no good.
Well, not only that,
he's a fool.
Not only that, he's got John Boehner, Boehner, however you say it, out there suing him to the point where he's had to spend $400,000 in legal fees to, you know, for this lawsuit over the fact that he outed the fact that Newt Gingrich was breaking the agreement he'd made with the House Ethics Committee, which Jim McDermott was sitting on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, here's a guy that his whole life has been in service, public service. He was a naval officer during the Vietnam War. He served as a state legislator. He was a leader in state politics for a long time before he went to Congress. He's just a great human being. And the right-wing media just assassinates people so quickly they don't even get to finish what they're saying hardly.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm proud to be there next Monday for a fundraiser for Jim McDermott. McDermott for Congress, McDermottForCongress.com, the website. Bill, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah, good talking to you. Barbara in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Barbara.
Good afternoon, Tom. I wanted to share some incredibly upbeat information. Yesterday, for the first time, I heard Michael Greco, who is the president of the American Bar Association, be interviewed on Washington Journal on C-SPAN yesterday morning. And his issue was speaking about a lawsuit that they are filing against Bush for continuing to torture in view of congressional prohibition against it, and he's giving it the end run with the signing statement.
That's right, and the ABA came out and made a statement on that day before yesterday.
Yeah. And this morning, by just circumstance, I happened to be listening to Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, and there Michael Greco was again. And this morning the issue was the NSA wiretap that he is his group is writing to Arlen Specter, telling him that what he is trying to settle for does not give us our rights as citizens. It only gives the White House what they want.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind, we're talking about the American Bar Association here. This is not, there's another lawyers association that's mostly a trial lawyers group, and I'm forgetting the name of it, but, you know, has a known liberal or progressive or whatever, you know, a political bias, let's say. The ABA has always been scrupulously apolitical. The American Bar Association has always been, I mean, you know, they're basically the ones who are the holders of the integrity of the legal profession, period.
I believe the transcripts from both speeches are on abanet.org.
Yeah, okay. ABA, we'll track it down. In fact, we should try and get Mr. Did you say Greco? Is this
Michael
name?
Greco.
Michael Greco. We'll try to get him on the program.
Sounds wonderful. Bye.
Barbara, thanks for the heads up. Carolyn in Tempe, Arizona. Hey, Carolyn, just a few seconds before we have to wrap the show up.
Yeah, hi, Tom. That's okay. This will be real fast.
Sure.
I just found one of the best websites since I found your archives. It's theocracywatch.org.
We have had them on the program.
Oh, excellent.
They are marvelous.
Their videos, The Life and Liberty,
yep,
and For All Who Believe, and
yep,
all of the documentation there is fantastic.
Yeah, the woman who is the founder of that, I'm forgetting her name, but she's been on this program twice, and
uh-huh,
we should do it again, because you're absolutely right. TheocracyWatch.org is just one of the finest websites out there, and it's it'll really shake you up.
It's critical,
really,
because
yep,
they target midterms because
yep,
of lower turnout.
There you go. Carolyn, thanks for the heads
Thank
up.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Coming up on tomorrow's program, was Ken Lay a corporate sinner or a corporate saint? Conservative Yaron Brook and I will debate that question, and Ali Ansari will be here on the future of American foreign policy and the next great conflict in the Middle East. That and more in your calls right here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.